that we can all agree on is that Jordan Love was pretty darn good last year, at least during the second half of the season. And it bodes well for what he could be in 2024. We spent some time earlier in the week talking about what the contract might look like. We'll ask Gary his thoughts on that coming up. But I want you to hear what Mark Murphy, he was not at the WIAA Girls State High School basketball tournament saying this. Instead, he said,
"We got to get the Chippewa Falls."
That's not what he said either, but he might be saying that on the bus tour. He did say that he was really impressed with Jordan Love. Here's Mark Murphy yesterday at the NFL meetings in Orlando.
"I'm pretty damn good. I'm good. No, I'm really, really happy for, you know, obviously Jordan, the way he played. And, you know, not only his, the level that he played at, especially as the season got on, he just seemed to get more and more confident, but his leadership. You know, we saw that, you know, throughout the offseason and certainly during the season. So really, really pleased with the way he's played. And I do think the future is really bright."
Yeah, I think we all agree with Mark on that. My question, Gary, as you've kind of watched this unfold, is there any, and I'm not saying it should be a big concern by any stretch of the imagination, but the one thing that I've been saying is that I do think that defensive coordinators with 17 games of film on Jordan Love are going to have a better idea of how to defend him. And then Jordan Love, who I think is really good, will figure out the counter move to that. But I think there's going to be some bumps in the road. I don't think he's going to play the way he played for the 9-game stretch and the season in which he threw 18 touchdowns and only one interception. I think he's going to have some bad games, which I don't think is that harsh of a criticism for a guy that I think looks pretty darn good. What do you say?
Well, I think is all on Matt LaFleur as well, because I think whether Matt LaFleur wants to admit it or not, we finally saw Matt LaFleur's offense, and we finally saw how Matt was able to scheme certain guys open that they knew guys were going to be open. So we finally saw all that. So all the defensive coordinators right now are looking at the Packers probably last 6-7 games and saying, this is what we've got to stop. Now it's up to Matt LaFleur to have a counter to what these defensive coordinators are doing to him. Jordan Love, rightly so, now got to have a counter to what they are going to take away. I think the biggest thing now, though, for this offense and the unknown is Josh Jacobs. What does he bring to his offense that's going to be different than what Aaron Jones did? Because they're not the same running back. I mean, can he catch the football out of the backfield? I mean, I saw him a couple years ago when he led the league in rushing, and he's a bruiser, hard-nosed guy. But I saw him break some runs, but last year I think he only rushed for like 800 yards, so didn't really have a great year. I mean, here's another guy I think that has a lot of miles on him, but most certainly I think will benefit from this offense, but still a unknown factor within this offense. And how does Matt LaFleur get him in this offense and use? Because I think what Matt has been able to do is find out what these guys can do best. And so it'll be exciting to see how he put Josh Jacobs in his offense and how he's used.
Yeah, I'm really eager. Matt LaFleur made a comment yesterday about seeing some film of Josh Jacobs running some choice routes. That is something that Aaron Jones did extremely well. I don't know if there's a ton of film, and talking to a few other people that have watched much more of Josh Jacobs than I had. I like Josh Jacobs as a runner. I like his style. Yeah. I think he was a really good player for the Raiders. I think Antonio Pierce feeling the same way about losing Josh Jacobs as Matt LaFleur feels about losing Aaron Jones tells you that the Packers should feel good that they got Josh Jacobs. Just because we think, you know, they could have still used Aaron Jones doesn't mean that Josh Jacobs isn't a great acquisition. But another thing that Matt LaFleur talked about yesterday was Jordan Love's development. Here is Matt LaFleur talking about his quarterback.
"We've been in contact, you know, just checking in, just seeing how he's doing with a lot of our players, but in particular him. And, you know, he went out west to California, and I know he's working out there. But yeah, I think he is excited to get back to work, and he's putting in that work right now as we speak."
I think what's interesting, Gary, is that, and we won't hear it today, but maybe you and Jesse can talk about it because you got two full days together coming up, is the conversation that he had yesterday, LaFleur talking about how they didn't really know what they had offensively going into last season with all the young guys at receiver and tight end and a first-year starting quarterback. And now when he's having these conversations that he mentioned with Love, they have ideas that they can build off of what they did last year. To me, that's going to be a game changer for both the coach slash play caller and for the quarterback.
Yeah, because it was evolving the whole time. I mean, player after player after player. I mean, you had to figure out what was Josiah DeGuara's role in this offense last. Okay, maybe not. But you still had a lot of young players, Dontavian Wicks, right, Romeo Doubs. A lot of these guys had their moments within this offense. Tucker Kraft, the only reason why he got more play because Musgrave went down, then Musgrave came back. So they have a lot of talent they can do a lot of different things with. I think in each game, it will be a different guy. I just think, to me, the sky's the limit with this team, and they're only getting better. Then I think you ask Josh Jacobs to this mix and what they can do with him. Now, Aaron Jones, we knew that they can slide him out and put him in a slot. Can Josh Jacobs do those types of things in the passing game? I'm not exactly sure, but they still have a lot of guys within this offense that they can move around, get the matchups that they really need. Jaden Reed is another guy. I think Jaden Reed's a guy that you can put in the backfield, you put him in a slot, motion guy. I mean, he seems to be the guy that really holds this team down from an offensive standpoint.
We'll talk more about what was discussed yesterday, including Mark Murphy mentioning what I thought was really interesting, and that's that he thinks Matt LaFleur and Goody are doing a great job. Yeah, hard
but
to argue with that position.
Other? While they're talking to each other.
Right, even when they're not keeping each other in the loop. We'll talk about that coming up. I want to remind you, Gerbil offices, one call, that's all. I was texting with David. He was wearing a bright red sport coat last night during the Bucks game, the double overtime loss to the Lakers. I saw him on the sideline or in the stands, and I thought that is one bright red coat. But, hey, he stands out. You know that. And that means that if you need his help and his firm's help because you've been injured, that he knows what he's doing because he knows how to get the job done. Check out Gruber-Law.com. That's Gruber-Law.com. Or make that one call, that's all. 414-276-6666. 414-276-6666. More with Gary Ellerson, our cousin sub of the day. It's Wilde and Tausch.
You're listening to Wilde and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN. Presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella at 855-PELLA-WI or visit online at PellaWI.com/radio.
It's on demand.
I say, hey, I'll be gone today, but I'll be back home around the way. It seems like everywhere I go, the more I see, the less I know. But I know one thing, that I love you.
So I mentioned this earlier, and there are a few things that are known to irritate me. And one of them is to suggest that I hate Goody or I hate the Packers, I hate the administration. Mark Murphy and I are not pals. I don't have the same rapport or, frankly, the same respect that I have for Bob Harlan. I just don't. I think Bob Harlan did things the right way. I think there's been some things during the Mark Murphy era that I didn't agree with. I don't hate him. I don't strongly dislike him. We don't have the same relationship.
Can we talk more about your Christmas cards you send to Goody? I feel like I was glanced over there.
His family is on our Christmas card list there, and we're on there. So I'm not like, and again, if there's something that I think he deserves criticism for, I criticize him for it. Right? Well, you've heard me do it. Whether it was the... Sadie, also very critical of Goody. The Davante Adams trade, which I still thought was a mistake. Whether it was the fact that he came out and said that Aaron Jones was absolutely expected to be back and then wasn't. Like, there are some missteps that he's had that it's my job to be critical of him. But the bottom line is, he's done a very good job. Hasn't won a Super Bowl on his watch.
Yes.
But has negotiated some challenging steps, including the situation with the starting quarterback, that was not easy to do And I think we've seen that Aaron Rodgers, in years that have followed or the year that has followed, probably was not the easiest guy to work with at times. So that said, I don't disagree with what Mark Murphy says right here, which is that they should feel really good about the job that the general manager, the head coach, and the chief contract negotiator have done with this team. Here's Mark Murphy.
And if you had told me a year ago, we'd be here, in the playoffs. Should have. I mean, we didn't. We lost to the 49ers, but, I mean, we were in that position. I can't say enough good things about both Matt and Brian. And Russ Ball is a key part of that as well. But the way Matt and Brian work together, it's really bodes well, I think, for the future.
Yeah, Matt LaFleur is a good football coach, and Goody's a good personnel guy. I don't know about how they work together, as we established earlier in the show, but they both do their jobs at a high level, Gary, and that's one of the reasons, along with Jordan Love playing damn well, that they're in the position they're in.
No, they are, and when you're trying to compare Bob Harlan to Mark Murphy, I don't think there is no real comparison there. I mean, but I think Mark has done an incredible job at advancing the Green Bay Packers,
the business,
into where they are, the business,
no doubt,
side of it. You
totally
have to give them all the credit. You yep. walk into Lambeau Field and in around there now, that's Mark Murphy's baby. And so he's done a great job of keeping us and keeping that thing generating money. We just don't like, we just don't like or understand the structure that has taken place and the way it has splintered out, so to speak. But it's under Mark's guidance. It seemed to be working. I still think that it's a little disjointed. I still think the right and the left hand should be knowing what's going on, and that's not happening. My first dealings with Bob Harlan in Green Bay was one of this. Kenny Stills and I take a limousine to Madison to a function. And we got a limousine, and the limousine company was from Green Bay. We got a limousine. The guy goes back to Green Bay. Then he comes back two days later, pick Kenny and I up, blah, blah, blah. And so we leave, and we never paid the guy. And a week later, Bob Harlan calls Kenny Stills and I up to his office. First dealing with Bob. Had never seen him before. We were rookies. Calls us up to his office. So we walk into the office. Bob is standing there. And Bob says, hey, this guy just called me, the owner of the limousine company in Green Bay, said that you guys took a limousine to Madison, and then he came and picked you up 2 days later and dropped you back off here in Green Bay. Is that true? And we both said, yeah, yes, sir, we did. And Bob said, well, did you pay him? And we said, no, sir, we didn't pay him. He says, why? I says, Bob, we never signed a contract. He says, well, did you shake his hand? I go, yeah, we shook his hand. He goes, a handshake deal is binding. Pay the man. That was Bob Harlan, right?
Uh-huh.
Man of the people. I mean, so when you – Bob operated – I think Bob was more for the people, and that's why everybody was talking about the stories that he always answered his phone.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if Mark does that, but that was Bob in a nutshell. But I would say Mark has done a great job of moving the franchise into today's time.
The business aspect, I would give him no criticism whatsoever for at all.
Right, right.
They are not a mom and pop organization. I get all that. Again, and maybe it's just that I believe that you can have hard conversations with people that are difficult, but they can also be done in a way that is respectful. Like, Mike McCarthy will never forgive him for the way he handled his dismissal. A half hour after a game, straight from the podium, had to make special arrangements to come back and be able to talk to his team the next day. I mean, you let him go home, you have him come in the next morning, you inform him that you're relieving him of his duties, you give him the opportunity to address the team, and then your interim coach takes over. Those are the types of things that do matter, because you said Bob Harlan, a man of the people.
Yes.
I don't think there's many people that would argue that Bob Harlan ever treated them poorly. And so mm-hmm. I think And you're telling me that Bob Harlan never had any difficult conversations with anybody? No, he definitely did, including telling two rookie knuckleheads who played for the Badgers, hey, you got to pay the limousine guy, right?
Got to pay the guy.
So you can have those conversations and do it in a way that is I just think, respectful. And I know Mike McCarthy very well, and Mike McCarthy is not perfect. But he deserved, and I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be fired. I personally would have let him finish the season because you were going nowhere anyway, and it was BS. It was BS to argue that you were giving Joe Philbin an opportunity to potentially earn the job. That was never it. He was never going to get the job, and Joe Philbin knew that. But nevertheless, I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be fired. I'm saying he deserved to be fired better, if that makes sense.
Well, I think what was Mike's really undoing, I believe in that press conference, maybe you can remember this, Jason. I think somewhere in that press conference after the game, or I think they asked Mike a question about what can he do to make it better. I think Mike says, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I think at that point when he said that, I don't know, that like he was lost for words, how to make this team better, I think didn't sit well with Mark Murphy.
Well, and that was because their roster was starting to come apart at the seams. And that was Goody's first year. And I don't blame Goody for that. You've heard me say this many times. I blame myself for not being more journalistic about Ted's struggles late in his time as the GM, because that definitely affected
that. Who was going to do that?
Right. And again, I allowed my affinity for...
We all knew that. You weren't the only one.
I know.
But
in my job, I am supposed to be able to put personal feelings aside, and the question of whether it's a private matter or not, it's a publicly owned team. And so I have always, from a moral perspective, I always felt like I did right by Ted and that others of us did. From a journalism perspective, that's probably open to debate. But the bottom line is that team was falling apart. Goody... Mm-hmm. It was his first year as the GM. You know what he did the following offseason. He brought in four free agents for the first team that Matt LaFleur coached, with the two Smith brothers, Adrian Amos and Billy Turner, and they started trending the other direction. So I'm not defending Mike McCarthy. He deserved – it was time to move on. But there was a way to do it, and the way they did it was not the right way. All right, we need to get to Homer and move on to him as he joins us every Wednesday. You guys do your little program together every Friday, right? You're on the Homer Hour. That's your gig with him?
Yeah, we got a little show that we do. I mean, it's not as big as the Wilder and Taos deal. I mean, I get it. So we got a little show that we do.
Well, that's for being honest, that's a pretty high standard
What kind of function did you take a limo to from Green Bay to Madison that took 2 days before you went home? Like, that sounds like a bachelor party is what that sounds like to me.
Well, I mean, it was a day on State Street. You got to hit them all. You got to hit the KK. You got to hit, you got to get them all in, but it takes 2 days.
A function. Yeah, it was a bar crawl with all our college buddies. Take the limo.
You're taking a limo up. Drop us off.
Come back and then forget to pay him. Homer joins us next.
I don't know if we forgot, but...
I appreciate your honesty. More next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN. Sponsored by American Family Insurance. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Whatever you do, make sure you do it right. You're making love or starting the schoolyard fight. Make sure, make sure. Make sure.
You know what that music means? Duke Tomato and the All-Star Frogs. It means it's time to talk to Homer. You hear him every weekday on the Homer Hour with a cavalcade of stars, including Gary Ellerson and Brian Belaga, John Anderson. I join him a couple times a week, although I do miss our daily chats that we used to have. You also hear him on the Marquette Men's Basketball Radio Network, including the Varsity app, which is where I listen to him on the call of Marquette's win over Colorado, which was good stuff. I paired it up with the TV. Good stuff. And, of course, you can also find him on YouTube. God Talk, My Faith with Homer and Pip. It is Steve the Homer. True Homer, good morning. How are you?
I'm awesome because Gary nailed it. Gary, perfect. We do a little show. We have a little show.
Got a little show?
We got a little show. And, in fact, Gary is going to be on the little show on Thursday because Tony Smith can only do a couple minutes because he's going to be in Dallas. And so Gary's going to help fill in for the last, 45 minutes of the little show on Thursday. That should be the new name of it. Not the home hour, but the little show. What do you think, Gary? Little show. Ellison.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, Do you get a Christmas card from Jason Wilde, though? I was just wondering.
Do I? I do, but I think that's because I send him the True Family letter. If I didn't. I think anytime someone sends you a Christmas card, you're just an evil person if you don't send them one back.
That's not. That's
is that what happened with Goody?
No, that's not. These are not. None of these things are true. First of all,
that premise?
I've had Goody's address from long before he was the general manager. This is something that dates back to his time as a scout. Also, I have been sending Homer our family Christmas card for many years, not because I got an advanced copy of the letter this year, which I felt very special by receiving electronically. We send Christmas cards to people that we care about and that we have great relationships
with. If someone was not on your list and they sent you a card, don't you feel obligated to send them one?
It's a good question.
No.
It's
not a good question. It's an easy question.
No, it's a good question. It's more complicated than you think because here's the deal. So we do Shutterfly, and as you saw, I put a lot of work into that. Like
it's fine.
You know, Gary, maybe you'll be on the list this year now that we've worked together a lot more. It's a lot. It's almost as much.
Now you have to send one more out.
Right, but when we place the order, we order a finite amount, and once we're out, we're out. So we don't have.
Hold on. This is just so weak.
When we're out, we're out.
Say you order 500. No, you always order 50 extra.
I think we order 225.
Okay.
Yeah,
and how many?
I think we had 11 left over this year.
Yeah, I think you should have at least 25. At 225, you should probably have 25 to 50 over.
Okay. Seems like good advice.
Why would you not do it? Somebody thinks because, enough to send you one. Don't you feel...
Because it's very rare that we get a Christmas card from someone who doesn't get one from us. And I don't want to spend the extra 25, 30 bucks to have 25 more in reserve, only to have them then have to be recycled because we didn't send them out. I want to try and I want to hit that sweet spot where I got a few extras.
Here's the deal. You give me the extras. And I'll make a list of who I'm going to send them out to. People that I know would love to get a card from Jason Wilde. Before they are sent out, you must approve of any of those so that you don't have to throw any extras out.
Ronnie McKee, top of the list.
Telling anybody. No, I'm not saying publicly who's on the list.
This took a turn.
This is family. This is private. But, what do you think, Jason? Right. You up for that?
You're going to send out Christmas cards of our family to people that aren't on our list that would like to get our Christmas card if I have extras?
But only with your approval. I have to get your approval. No one will know that list. This is not, you say you have 15 extras, and I send you a list of, let's say, 25, because God 15, knows whoever you might
15
not want.
15 people.
And then you check the 15, and I send them, because I know this, you send yours out like October the 5th or something.
That's not true. No, we cut it pretty close this year. It took me a while.
Okay.
My coupon almost expired. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Right. The people that would get them from you a little late, they don't mind. They're just so honored to have it from you. Okay. So are you willing to do this?
You know,
well, what
Marquette,
do you mean? Oh my God! What is the problem with you?
Marquette is in the Sweet 16. I was all excited.
All right, I'll make you a deal.
I get to decide who makes or doesn't make the cut, but one of the people has to be Shaka Smart.
I do not have his address, but I'll take care of that. Yes, one will be to Shaka Smart.
So this is a professional radio segue from my Christmas card list.
I know we shouldn't talk about this, but real quick.
No, it's not.
One has to be Greg Gard, right? If Shaka Smart gets one, Greg Gard has to be on the list.
Greg, go for it, Gary.
Sure. Greg Gard, I would be happy to. I don't know if Greg wants one from me, but I would be happy to put him on the list as well.
And if you're sending to both of them, you have to send one to Sundance Wigs.
Let me just tell you, Jason, for people that don't get it, everybody would love one from you because it's not about you. It's all about the girls. So everybody loves to, I think, for Christmas and stuff, find Jason, whatever. But to have some information about your kids is awesome. I think people should do that more often. And they don't, but that's fine.
You can have this conversation with Evan Cohen, who is against the holiday card, as we established on our show
pathetic. Oh. He needs therapy.
So you're gonna deliver one of my extra Christmas cards to Shaka Smart because I am.
Well, I mean, I know I won't. Well, yeah, but I'll get an address that it can be mailed to. I'm not personally gonna deliver it.
Oh well, then I have to reconsider. Help me with this because I brought this up on Monday. When Justin Garcia was in as our cousin's sub of the day, I watched his post game interview on CBS. I have been a fan of his from afar. I've never met him. I've never interviewed him. I mean, I've never met him since he's been at Marquette. I wrote a story and I interviewed him when he won at VCU, and I wrote something in the aftermath of that for the State Journal. But that was the only time. It was a phone interview. I've never met him in person. And I have not met him in person since he's been the Marquette coach. I have admired him from afar. And we stole his milkshake thing with our softball team that the girls were on last spring. I just really like how much he preaches and appears to live connectivity and love and team bonding and everything like that. What I said to Justin Garcia when he was in as our cousin sub is that because I'm a reporter, and because there is this natural requirement to be skeptical, I always worry about people that I really like being too good to be true and not being the authentic thing that I think they are. Can you tell me that I don't have to worry about Shaka Smart during that in that department?
Well, you don't have to, but here's the dilemma that everyone has who's the voice of the school. If it wasn't true, I'm not going to tell you it's not true.
But you would find a way to let us know that you were.
Not anymore. The expectations are that, given the negativity of social media, you can't do that anymore. I mean, you used to be able to, but you can't anymore. So, I mean, then I accept that. But yeah, he's an amazing person. I told him once, I don't listen to you; I just watch you. And I would tell people the same way. Just observe him. You learn more observing him than, like, when he said all these things, you know, like, by the way, everybody's doing the same thing. Like, everybody hugs their players now. Danny Hurley at UConn hugs his player. He hugs his players. And then everybody talks about loving, you know, like when you hear players that win, like, oh, I love my team. The connectivity, all this stuff. I don't know if they stole it from Shaka, but you start noticing this from all the other teams. Hugging? Everybody hugs each other before they go into the game when they announce the starting lineup. I've been watching basketball a long time. Hugging is new.
Okay.
That's good. Loving and crying when you lose. Everybody cries now when you lose.
All right. So here's my thing, though. I think
I answer your question?
He's not
an
really.
Amazing person.
Not really.
Then I'll tell you, and people can believe it or not they want. He's an amazing person who's driven by two things. He's driven to win. No one has ever wanted to win more than he does. But he's equally driven to change the lives of young men and give them an example. And I don't know exactly how to describe it, but he wants to make them better, make their lives better. And that is every bit as important to him as winning. But don't for a second think. You watch him. You'll see how badly he wants to win.
Yeah, I guess.
By his emotions and energy.
All right. So my issue with what you said there is you're right. That I don't disagree that there are more coaches and more teams that talk about this and act like it is important. But I think you can also watch, if you watched enough basketball games, which I felt like I did for the first two rounds because that is my favorite sports time on the calendar, you can see the guys that it's that it feels a little more forced and a little less authentic. Wouldn't you acknowledge that? Like,
no,
if I see Rick Pitino hugging guys, I'm not sure that it comes off as convincing as when Shaka does it, for example.
Right. Now, and I'll say this. This is not – Shaka's been doing this for some time. And, in fact, I don't know, it was maybe his first year, he mentioned all this stuff. And I said, well, like, haven't you said that before? I mean, he's spoken of this, that this is a special group. And I said, yeah. And I said, so what's different? He goes, they listen to me. I thought, yeah, that's the key. They buy into it. They believe it. He's obviously, as any coach, can have another group that aren't necessarily as don't buy into it the same way. And I think if I had to pick a player that I think is reflective of that, to the buy-in, would be Oso. But again, that's what it comes down to. You say these things. And some players don't buy into it. These guys all buy into it. They believe it. And, you know, clearly no one has ever said about Shaka going way back that he isn't genuine and that he is.
So, Homer, you mean to tell me Kevin O'Neill's not hugging players?
Ooh, good reference.
No, the hugging started. You can go back and check. I'm talking about pre-game hugs. Now, this is the hugging I'm talking about.
But do you have a problem with hugging or no? Is that too much for you?
I think that's less than 10 years old.
Okay, fine. All right.
I mean, they've had that for years. They've had like little – it's not signals. You know, they high-five, but high-five wasn't good enough. Yeah. So it's like a five or six things they do with a certain player. Okay. But hugging, somebody can go check it out. I'm willing to have your institute look into it. I would say the hugging – the four games is less than 10 years old by anyone.
All right. Well, they got North Carolina State, big fella in the paint now. He's been playing lights out, hasn't he?
He has been, but he doesn't rebound. He's an odd player. He's as big as he is, and he's as wide as a house. But the guy they played against, Colorado, was very big and more of a force around the basket. The other guy that's a concern at NC State is Diarra, who's very good around the basketball. Marquette, I'm curious to see how they defend those two guys because the wide body guy is more of a shooter from 6'10", and Diarra does much more. He does everything. And so, but Marquette should win the game. I mean, they're an 11 seed because they had to win five games in a row to get into the tournament. That's just incredible. You set that up assuming no one could ever win five in a row. I mean, they probably shouldn't even have been in their ACC tournament, but they put everybody in, and so then going, there's no way. These guys will lose. The most they'll do is win a couple games, and they beat everybody. So they clearly are playing as well as just about anybody in the country.
The big fella to which Gary and Homer refer is DJ Burns, who is a big fella. He's listed at 6'9", 275. He reminds me of Tausch. He's got great feet.
Yes.
Right?
I was going to mention that, but I was going to say Tausch must have been just like that in high school. That good. But I don't think Tausch was that big in high school. So I was afraid to use that connection. But excellent. Great feet and has a good shot, too.
Yeah, he does. It is odd, the rebounding aspect. Hey, what did you think of what you saw from Kolick in the first two rounds? Sydney and I sat together on the couch and listened to you and watched the game. That Varsity app worked fine for me, by the way, just for the record. Yep. But I am curious. You know, there was obviously the oblique injury that kept him out down the stretch run, but he's a fun player to watch and so good. What did you think of how he played, and how good do you feel about him moving forward?
Well, the MVP are the doctors, whoever decided to sit him out as long as they did, because he played 37 and 39 minutes.
Right.
After sitting out for six and a half games, clearly meaning he probably could have played sooner. The crazy part is no one could have anticipated he would play this well and specifically this long after sitting out for 6.5 games. So credit to them. And yes, they're, and other players have improved in certain areas because they had to with him gone. So if Marquette continues to move on, at some point the discussion will be that the oblique injury helped them become a better team. But that'll be determined. In order to get that discussion, they'd probably have to make the Final Four. I mean, this is a game that they're going to be favored to win, and they should be. But the game after that, either Duke or Houston, that's a different level when you then get to the Final Four, and then you bring up totally different stories. Because right now, they've been as high as 2 in the country. They're 8th-ranked team in the country, so they're doing what they were supposed to do, and that would include a win over NC State. So all the great stories. But the ability to him not just play as well, but to play that many minutes. There's nobody who expected that many minutes. And he had to play that many against Western Kentucky to win. And then he's been fantastic. He's special. They compared him to Jason Webb because Jason Kidd. And it's all because of the number of rebounds. There are point guards that get scoring and assists, but few that have as many rebounds as he has. One, he's very good at it, and two, Marquette needs him to do it. So
yeah.
So the stats he puts up are going to be legendary as well because of the importance of him as a rebound.
Sydney and I were talking as we were watching, and I just kept talking to her about how he seems to be always in control, and he sees the floor so well. And I mentioned this to you. You know, I was a little confused because I felt like Jay Wright had been out of coaching for too long to have coached against Kolick, but maybe I'm getting the timeline wrong. But he made the comment that early on that they always forced Kolick to go to his right because he couldn't, because he's left-handed, and that they would back off of him at the three-point line because he couldn't shoot it very well. And the fact that he now has become the player that he is, I told Sid, that's proof of how much you can improve if you work your tail off. But I am amazed at how he's always under control and the way he sees the floor. I just think that he really is special. He is really fun to watch.
Yeah, he's under control, except when it comes to talking to everybody. Loves to talk to everybody. Loves to be in a verbal battle. The verbal battle when he first started used to be with he and Shaka yelling back and forth all the time. It's almost like Al McGuire. Now he's always in a battle with a player or somebody on the sidelines. He just
what about with you?
He loves to irritate people. No, I have to work at it. He's a natural. I think maybe it's from being from Rhode Island, or maybe he got it from his dad. But yeah, he's always in the middle of something, looking at something, saying something. But he's an incredibly skilled player who sees the court. And then, to me, the most important part he serves is his ability to rebound, which Marquette needs him to do, in addition to all the other things. And just so you know, I claim that his three-point shot has gotten better because he's elevated it more. I call it almost a hang time three. And I asked him, and he said, and I told him, look, because he kind of said no, and I said, I checked. And it's you're like 5% higher. Tony Smith was next to me and said, Tyler, you should know that Homer makes stuff up all the time. And I go, yeah, I didn't make that up. And Tyler goes, well, maybe we need a new radio play-by-play guy. And I said, maybe we need a new point guard. So he said,
so you did talk. So, no, so you did do this.
To battle even with me. We had a debate whether he's better than Travis Diener. Somebody heard I said that, and he asked me, and I said, yeah, I mean, Travis is better than you. He goes, you really said that? I said, yeah, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I said, but why would you care? He goes, what do you mean? He goes, I'm 69 years old. You just turn to me if I were you and go, you old fart, you don't know what you're doing anymore. Just basketball teams, go away. He turns to me and he goes, well, maybe I'm nicer than you. So I don't have a much of a relationship with any of the players that much, but with him, it's hard not to because he likes interaction and feedback and a battle. And
nice.
That's part of what makes him a very good player. Yeah.
All right. Well, let me know if he wants to be on the Christmas card list. Homer,
No. You decide. What? Do you want him on the Christmas card list?
No.
And then if you send him one, he'll feel obligated to send you one. And then
goes life. I don't think he will. I don't think he's in that club. I can check with him. But whether or not, just so people understand, because with Tauscher, you have to be careful. Jason decides whether someone gets sent one. Can I get an address for Tyler Kolek? Yes. The one person I felt best with about the win for Marquette, I felt best about his dad. His dad was a really good player, and I think he loves watching his kid play, and I think it would have been devastating to him if they had made the Sweet 16. So the first person I thought of was his dad when they won.
All right, you Homer and Tony will be on the call Friday night, tip time 6:09 Central
Time. Right, and Tony and I will be on the little show Thursday, because I don't leave till Friday morning, 5 to 5:15, and then Gary Ellerson, who can't be on Friday because there is no show, is going to help out for the final 45 minutes of the little show on Thursday. And lastly, do you want me to get Tyler Kolek's address to send him a Wildy Christmas card?
I don't think Tyler Kolek wants the Wildy Christmas card. I think he'll be fine without it. But tell him that we are really enjoying watching him play. Thanks, okay. Homer.
I will do that. Bye.
That is Steve the Homer True.
There it is. Why do I feel like you guys have some sort of a contentious relationship?
We don't at all. He's just difficult. And after the many, many years that I've been doing radio with him, I both enjoy it. I like the challenge. Like, I like the challenge of getting Ted Thompson to answer a question. I like the challenge of talking with Homer. We still have one more segment left in the 10 o'clock hour, and not that you would know it by the fact that it's 11:01. More Wildy and Tausch straight ahead. Stick around.
You're listening to Wildy and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin and sponsored by American Family Insurance.
Our clock is all jacked up because Homer wanted to send out my extra Christmas cards to people who might want them, which threw off the timing of our Marquette. They're in the Sweet 16. We don't need to be talking about my Christmas cards. Fair?
Fair enough.
Who sent the first obviously Christmas it's important, card though. Between you and Goody? Who initiated that first?
I suppose I would have asked him for his address. So that would have been, and then he said, well, make sure you give me yours. So this would have been, God, let's see, the girls were born in 2010 and 2011, so this would probably have been 2011. That would have been the Christmas that I would have done it for. Like, again, for those that don't understand the dynamic there, like, he came up on the scouting side, and I came up on the reporting side. We're basically the same age. He's a little bit younger than me. But, like, I've known the guy forever. I don't hate him. I do disagree with some of the things he did.
Well, who thinks that you hate that?
I think because we can get into this in the 11 o'clock hour, but I think because the praise of him is almost universal, that if you are negative in any way, you must hate the guy, which is just not true.
Oh, well, no, you're just doing your job.
Thank you, Gary. And part of my job is to tell you, calling all Packers fans, Mark Tauscher here. How's that, Jesse? Did that sound
pretty
like
good?
Him at all?
Pretty good.
American Family Insurance wants to see you and a friend in Detroit for this year's draft. Detroit. You can enter the Dream Draft Day sweepstakes. No truth to the rumor that Jesse will accompany you for your chance to win 2 tickets to the draft, travel and hotel accommodations to and from Detroit, and a custom jersey, and even more. So go to amfam.com/Packers. That's amfam.com/Packers to learn more and to enter. There's no purchase necessary. This is my favorite part. American Family Insurance Company, SI, and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin. The 11 o'clock hour starts very late. It'll start with, oh, God knows what it'll start with. Homer will probably call back with more people on the list of Christmas cards.
Oh,
so
sure.
Stick around. Gary Ellerson is our outstanding Cousin Sub of the day. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. It's Wildy and Tausch.